How's everybody doing? Having a good day so far? Good time with Dan, get some free stuff, good food. When's the movie start? Okay, so we've seen a lot of good stuff today talking about the story of how you build some business applications, starting with Desi doing the data binding techniques and all the data aspects. Yvor gave you a great background on WCF. Dan talked about WCF RIA services and when you should use some of that, and hope you have a good perspective on how to get the data to the client. I'm going to talk a little bit about the MVVM patterns and how you can use some of that to integrate into your application some good practices that will help you achieve some good goals. So the one thing I'd like to do first when I talk about MVVM is why would I even bother using this? So let's start there. There we go. So we're going to talk about why are you going to use MVVM, what is it a little bit, what is this acronym, what does it help you with? And then we're going to get into responding to user actions. How do you deal with interacting with the user with MVVM? What does it help you with there? Abstraction. You probably heard that a couple times today. I know Dan showed you a little bit about how you pull some services out. I'm going to build on that a little too and show you how to work some RIA services into the MVVM pattern. Then we're going to talk about testing the design surface. So you've got this designer with some data in it, and you've seen a lot of the demos today with that book club application. You're going to see how that can be helpful to actually test your application. And we'll talk about RIA services and how we pull that into the mix without causing any friction. So let's start off by talking about model view, view model. You heard Scott talk about it. I talked about a little keynote. Dan went through some of it here. What exactly is this? A view is really just a screen. It's your UI. So you start off with this UI, and you've got model, your data. So you've got a screen, you've got data. It's pretty simple. You want to put the data on the screen. But what do you do beyond just loading your fields? Sometimes you've got presentation logic. The way I always look at it is if you have an if-then statement or a switch case statement or some kind of logic in your UI, that's logic that generally doesn't belong in your view, in your screen. Your screen is supposed to present the data to help the user interact, maybe animations if you're doing Silverlight. The model is just your data. It's the properties on your object, your person object or your book object. So when you get to user interaction, or sorry, when you get to business logic in the UI, you want to pull some code out of the view to a view model. So why do you want to do this? Because, well, there's a couple reasons we'll go through, but the big reason is you want to make this more maintainable, more scalable. And we'll get to a couple really important examples of how this works. So first, quickly, the M in MVVM is the model. It's your data. It's pretty easy to go through. People also put validation in here as well. So if you're using the data annotations that RIA Services supports and that Silverlight supports, you can actually use required or string length or even a custom validation method right on top of your data. The view. It's the screen or the page or the control that you're dealing with. User-friendly presentation of information. It's basically the screen. It's the thing you're looking at. And in that, you can have things like themes and styles, bindings, events, behaviors, anything that the user has to deal with. Something that's not so much logic, but it is in the presentation of the information. So the last one we talk about here is the view model. The view model is, the way I like to call it, it's the glue between the view and the model. So the view model is your logic. It's the presentation logic to get the data into your view. So what are things that this might do? It might have the model. The view model might have a reference to the model, so you can bind the model and talk to the view with it. The model never talks to the view never talks to the model. It's the view model that's the glue that says, I'm going to be the traffic cop between the two. You also might have properties of its own on the view model. For example, sometimes the data you get from your database and bubble up through RIA services or whatever means you may have to get to the client might not be enough to support the UI. So your model might have information about the book, but maybe you need a property like, is the application busy? Do I need to show a progress bar? Is there an error message to show to somebody? That's stuff you don't store in a database. You don't store it in your model. So you've got other aspects you might want to do, maybe some custom fields somewhere. If you do that, you can stick those in the view model itself. Another thing the view model is good for is your model stores things like book or person or whatever else you might have, but what if you've got two disparate types of models that aren't related to each other, but you want to show them on the same screen? They don't come out of the business, out of the database like that, and they don't come out of your server tier like that, but you might want to put them together just for this one particular screen. So in that case, you could use a view model to get both of those different models that aren't related to each other and surface them as public properties in the view model so you can display them in the view. So there's a lot of reasons the view model can handle logic for you that doesn't really belong in the model, and it certainly doesn't belong in the view. So it's that glue between those two. It also talks to services to load and save data for you. So it does a lot of that heavy lifting. So how does this look? You've got a view over here. You've got a model on the other side, and that view model's in between. Inside the view, you've got some XAML. That's where your design's going to go, your animations, a lot of the stuff I showed this morning, and you can now debug in it, Silverlight 5. Your code, which that little tiny little square down there, that's not really reusable. So the code in your code behind, and I'm talking about that, the XAML.cs file, all that code in that code behind is specifically for that view, which means anything you do in there is not reusable by other views or other view models or any other place. It's code that's in there, so you can't really can't share it. So you want to abstract that out. That's one advantage of abstraction. The other thing is it's harder to do unit testing on it. It just makes life harder. Plus, you kind of get back into that old, dare I say, spaghetti code mode that we used to have with some of our applications. So you bind the view model to the view to show your data. Your view model has that presentation logic that we discussed, and the model itself tells the view when data changes. So here our model is going to say, I'm going to implement the iNotify property changed interface, which we'll talk about in just a moment, and it's going to tell the view model, hey, something on me changed. Somebody changed the person, or I got a new value for it, which in turn the view will listen to through the data bindings built into Silverlight. So why would you want to use MVVM? We talked about a couple of these as we went through. First, separation of concerns. I might have something I want to share and reuse, so I could do that as well. Separation concerns could also help you with breaking out your UI code from your presentation logic, from your data, your model. Data binding in XAML. So you really want to take advantage of data binding. MVVM doesn't give it to you, obviously. Silverlight has it built in, but the XAML-based data binding is really powerful in WPF and Silverlight. MVVM is built for this. Unit testing. If you build unit tests, it makes it a lot easier to break out things that you can test. Another aspect is, if you break things out into separation of concerns, whether you're using MVVM or not, general rule I like to follow is, I like to have a class have one responsibility. That class is responsible for taking care of one specific thing. Maybe getting data could be one, like a data service. Or navigation. I might have a navigation class that I want to go do something. Or storing to isolated storage. I don't want that stuff being muxed together somewhere. Breaking that out really helps you out. MVVM is very good for that. It also helps the designer developer symbiosis, and you build some maintainable, scalable, consistent code. So with that, let's go take a look at a demo. Okay. We're going to look at here first the way you can actually bind a view to a view model, because it's the important first step you have to take. So the application, which we've seen several times, is a book club. We've got this view up here, and I want to go get data for categories and books and book of the day. All this data has got to come back. We saw earlier where Dan and Yavor brought the data back across from the server to the client. Now we're going to take that data and we're going to bind it up into a view model to our view. So first, we've got our view class. And I'll stop the code here. Here's our view, and it's got XAML in it, and we've got a book view model. Inside the book view model, you're going to have properties for commands, all the buttons that get clicked. It's also going to have lots of properties in here for things like categories or books or book of the day. And these are going to be surfaced in the view. Now, if we go look at the view itself, we've got some XAML here. And at the top of the XAML, what I do is I take the data context of the page itself and I bind that to the name of the view model. So you see here, binding to the book view model. Now the key here is I could just create an instance of the book view model right in this class through XAML, and I could bind it directly. What we're going to use is something called a view model locator, and I'll show you why that's important. The view model locator is going to work at runtime and at design time for me. And you can see here I've got my design time data, although it's not nearly very sexy, but I've got my design time data showing up, which helps me look at my information. So if I go look at that view model locator, it's a very, very simple class, which in its constructor, in this case, I'm creating an instance of a property called bookViewModel, which is going to create a new instance of that view model. And that view model requires two services. Dan talked about service agents. These service agents are going to help that bookViewModel create and do other tasks. For example, my bookViewModel is pretty useless to my view if it can't deal with going to other pages. So I have this thing called PageConductor, which really does navigation for me and handles it all so the bookViewModel can do that. The second thing is the book view model needs to be able to produce books. It's got to save them and get them. So here we've got a book data service. I've got to inject that into the book view model, and it's happy as can be. Now, one thing that's slightly different that I want to point out with my two different view models, and I have a book view model and a checkout view model, is that the book view model, you'll notice, gets created once for the entire application. There's only one book view model. So that means no matter how many screens I create that need that book view model, they're all going to share the same instance, the same data. The other option you have is to create a property, like here, the checkout, and every time I go get a new checkout view model, I'm going to create a new instance of it. The difference here is the book view model gets created once, so if I have four screens that use it, they're all sharing the same data. If I use the checkout view model, every time I create a new instance of the checkout screen or others that use it, it would create a new instance. So the way you do it really depends upon your application and what you're trying to achieve. And if you wanted to create this guy here and have him create a new instance every time, you just comment that out and actually put the property down there. It's very simple to do. You can see the code is only about 24 lines long, and it's very, very simple. The other thing that's important to point out is the model itself with the book uses the iNotify property change interface. That interface supports the property changed event handler, which you can simply implement here by raising a property change event. That event is really important because it's what helps the model talk back to the view model and then to the view to say something in me changed, please let the user know by refreshing the screen. And the bindings built into Silverlight take care of that for us. So if we flip back to the slides at this point, we'll go to the next step. And I've got a lot of slides we're going to go through, and then we'll flip back and forth to the code. So now that we've got the view binding to the view model, the next step is we've got our data showing, how do I handle user interaction? What does this mean? Well, somebody clicks a button, some event needs to take place somewhere, you select a row in a list. What are your options? Well, the first thing is in Silverlight 4, we start with the support for iCommand. The iCommand interface, which helps the button-based class, like toggle button, the button, checkbox, things like that. If you want to use that to handle events from when a user selects or clicks one of those buttons, you can bind it directly to a command in your view model. You saw some of those commands when I briefly looked at the code. So commands support buttons, which is great, and it has an additional feature of the isEnabled. So you can actually put a delegate in the canExecute parameter of a command, and that delegate can then intercept any calls to say, hey, is this supposed to be enabled at this time or not? Specifically, let's say it's a save button. The save button's clicked, you want it to fire a particular method, but before that ever even happens, you may not want to have that save button enabled if the data on the screen has not changed. So you can use the canExecute to do that. So this is a great way to go. It's very simple, it's very popular, very consistent pattern. The downside of this is it doesn't cover every scenario, unfortunately. This helps with button base, but what if you've got a list box and you want to do the selection changed event, like I showed in the keynote today? There is no command support for handling list box selected changed. Or maybe you want to do something off the wall, like somebody did a mouse right button down click on a rectangle. There's no command support for that. But you still might want to do it, and you don't want to restrict your UI based upon some rules that somebody put in place like this. So another option is you can use something called triggers or behaviors. Triggers or behaviors are a feature that you can use, and they're built into Blend, Expression Blend, and there's also a toolkit called MVVM Lite Toolkit, which Laurent Bunion, Dan mentioned, in Switzerland wrote. The event to command behavior and the invoke command action are very, very similar. Invoke command action comes with Expression Blend 4, so you can use that with the Windows Interactivity DLL, or the event to command comes with MVVM Lite, which Laurent's application has. Both of these are a little more verbose, that's the downside, and it's an additional DLL you have to use, but with these you can bind any event to any command in your view model. As we mentioned today in Silverlight 5, you can actually use custom markup extensions to go even a step further, not use a third-party DLL, and you can do the same thing with one line of XAML. So Silverlight 5, you have more options. Silverlight 4, commands and behaviors are the way to look at. And my general rule of thumb is use a command if it's available, otherwise your back door is the behavior. So why do you want to do this? Because you want to handle all your logic of when a user clicks a button from the view model, not from your code behind. So let's go show this in action. So if we look at our view model, right at the top, I've got all these commands. Clear the filter, search for books, select the category, edit books. All these commands are set up, and let's scroll down to where they're actually being used. Here we've got a search books command, and when it's actually being clicked, don't know if you can see that, so I'll zoom in. When it's clicked on, it's going to call OnSearchBooks. It's got an optional second argument for that can execute. This will help me enable or disable the button as needed. In this case, I'm not going to enable or disable. I always want search to be enabled. But in the case of the save books command, what I've got down here is I've got on save books will be fired, and I've got a lambda which is saying go ahead and fire the has changes method to tell if I should return true or false to enable or disable this. It's built into this command. In this case, I'm using the relay command, which is an implementation of iCommand. So all you have to do is create a class of your own to do that, and it will implement iCommand. In this case, relay command comes from the MVVM Lite toolkit as well. I'll give that another little plug. So once we've got our command, if we go look at our save, once we call the save method, we're going to call into the book data service. Again, this is important that the view model is not actually doing the logic for the save. It's just saying, hey, the view model is going to save the data. It's going to call off to this book data service to actually handle how it gets saved. This way, if you change the mechanism that's actually doing your saving, whether it's RIA services or something else, some other repository pattern, you don't have to affect your view model. Your view model just says, hey, Mr. Book Data Service, go call save. You figure out how to save it. Because it's asynchronous, when it's done, it's going to come back to the callback, and it's going to tell it with the submit operation, was it successful, wasn't it? And if it was successful, it'll tell the user and put a message up to the screen. If it wasn't, then it'll say that it was unsuccessful. Pretty easy to do. So on the view side of the world, let me close this guy down momentarily. There we go. So on the view side of the world, I've got some buttons to look at. And notice that my submit button is grayed out up here. That submit button itself has a command bound to it. So here's my data. There's my command property that's built in with Silverlight 4. I'm binding directly to the save books command on my view model. And I don't have to say the name of the view model or anything, because remember, the view model is bound to the entire view. So now anything in my view model, my view can access through bindings pretty easily and quickly. I also mentioned that you could use behaviors. So over here on my list box for categories, when they select an item in the list box, I want that to call off to the category. If I could get my mouse to be happy. Whoa. We've made it all day without that happening. So let's see here. Category list, let's go look for it. So here's my list of categories, and notice the syntax here, there's no command property. If I come down into it and I try to type in command, you're not going to see it. It says, hey, I don't know what you're talking about. I say, yes, you do. It says, no, you don't. We make up later. So here we have the trigger. That's the event trigger for MVVM Lite called event to command. I could have used the invoke command action as well. It's the same amount of code, but it's not bad, but it's 5 lines of XAML. It's an extra DLL I have to put in. And when I'm done, I'm basically saying, now take that command and bind to that select category command for me. That's why it's nice if you can use the command instead of the behavior, because it's less syntax, less DLLs to handle. Behaviors are fine, though. There's no performance issues or whatnot either. And again, Silverlight 5, you could get rid of all of this, and you could just create a custom markup extension up here. So cool stuff on that. In Blend, it supports fully being able to add a behavior very quickly, or you can just type the XAML here. Okay, that's not what I want to look at. Let's go back to slides. So we talked about how we bind the view to the view model. We talked about how to handle interactions from the user with commands and with behaviors, which handles all the clicks and whatnot that the users are going to do. The next thing to talk about is the services and the separation piece. I kept on talking about the separation of concerns and breaking things out. So let's talk about why that's important and how you can do it. So we have a view and a model and the view model. That view model's got a lot of stuff going on. It's got the presentation logic, handle user interaction. It's got references to models. But it's nice to deal with a little less code in there because you might want to reuse something. For example, the book data service that we have should be used by multiple view models in my application. I don't know where someone's going to save a book. I don't know where they're going to get a book. I don't want to have to be required to do it in one place like that. If I put that code inside the view model, then that's not shareable. I want it to be in its own class, handle saving books and getting books, so any view model can just call it, like the code we saw that says bookdataservice.save. So how do I do that? I want to yank that service code right out of the view model, and I want to perform operations and other reusable tasks from there. So by breaking that other services, it means other MVVM triads, like the view model on the upper left here, can actually reuse those services in the way they need. For example, like the book data service, or maybe like the page conductor service that I showed you earlier. That page conductor service handles navigation between screens. I don't know who's ever going to want to use the method that says go to book screen, but I'm sure it's going to be more than one place. So why should I limit myself? Plus, by breaking it out into services, it's much more testable and much more scalable. So let's take a look at this. So flipping back to the code, we've got our services here. I think I closed my view model. There we go. We've got our view model, which has a service being injected into it in the constructor. Notice I've got the page conductor and the data service. The page conductor itself is going to have methods in it, such as, let's go check it out. It's got methods in it like display error, go to checkout view, that's an old method, go to view whatever. So it's going to allow you to go to different places, go back. It can do other things like this as well. If you had like a Windows Phone application, you could use things like go back, go forward in the navigation chain. So what this guy's job is to handle, I don't care how you get from this screen to that screen, this class will figure it out for you. And the reason that's powerful is in this case, I'm using the navigation service built into Silverlight, but maybe I didn't want to do that. Maybe I want to crank up my views myself. So however you actually want to navigate from screen to screen, abstract that into a class so the class handles it and can do it all for you. Just breaking up your functionality. So the other service we had is the book data service. And my book data service has a lot of cool methods on it, does a lot of neat stuff. Inside of here, we've got get checkouts, you know, when you check out a book from a library, for example. And then it's got the completed handler for all of these. It's also got things like save. So this is the thing that handles the actual save for me. It's got an action for the submit callback. It's got a context to see if RIA Services has changes. So here it's saying that's the RIA Services domain context. And that domain context has a property called has changes. If there were changes, I'm going to go ahead and submit changes for it. And this is all built into RIA Services. If I was using straight WCF to do this, I might call and open up my client proxy. And my client proxy might have a method like go save asynchronously. And I'd set the completed handler and get the data back and do what I need. So again, the implementation of the save is up to the service. All you have to do in the view model is go ahead and call that save method. So we scroll down here and we look at the save. You can see on save. I just say, you know what? I've got a book data service. You pass it in through my constructor. Call save. When I'm done, tell me. You know, it's kind of nice. It's kind of like, you know, with kids, I'm like, you know what? When you're done with your homework, just tell me. You don't want to actually look over every problem, although you should. So. Too many chuckles in that one, huh? So let's go back to the slides. So we talked about how we can do separation with these services. And, you know, I keep saying maintainable, scalable, blah, blah, blah. It gets really interesting when you've got large applications, but there's an advantage to using services so you have other features available to you. And one of those that I really like is design time data. So how do services play in design time data, and what is design time data? Well, I'm not a designer, and I don't pretend to be one. But like in this application, when I'm actually testing this and looking at the screen, it does me no good when I'm writing the XAML to sit here and look at it and go, did my data load? Is it in the right place? I mean, how many times do you create something in Silverlight, and then the data is like, you know, the margins are wrong, or it's overrunning over here, you forgot to wrap, the stretch isn't proper, all that stuff. And you have to press run and stop and run and stop. It gets old real quick. So design time data, you can do things like this, where you can say, what am I looking at? Where are my bindings? How's it all looking? Bam. That looks a lot better. Now I know, you know what, the categories look okay. The books, I don't like them too much. They're formatted properly and centered, but maybe I want them to wrap, because what if I have a long title? It becomes pretty obvious. The scroll bar is showing up for the books for me, which is great, because, you know, that's not automatic maybe. You want to make sure you don't have a problem there. Is my image showing up on the far right? I mean, I don't know how many times I create images and I forget to put the right syntax in to point to the image, but it's like a repeated process for me that I can't learn. So seeing it in design data makes it easy. So before I ever actually roll this out, I know it's working. Notice as well that my submit button is grayed out. When I go back here, without the design data, my submit button is enabled. The reason it's grayed out here is because I have that can execute method that I'm bound to. And the can execute is determining that there were no changes when I have design time data. My design time data was just set up, it loads data, there was no changes, and it disables the button. So I'm not only showing my data and looking at layout, but I'm also testing my logic for my submit buttons and for other features. Very, very cool. So Windows Phone's pretty popular. How many people here have a Windows Phone? About a quarter, maybe a third. Pretty cool. I've got one. I'll put my hand up. One of the things I like about Windows Phone is you can design with Silverlight. And all these things I'm showing you here are completely applicable to Silverlight. So here's an application that I'm writing for a Twitter client. And when I'm writing this, can you tell me if that's a list box or a grid or a stack panel? Or you don't know what I'm going to stick in that box, do you? It could be a clown or something. So when you use design time data, it makes it a lot easier to look at. So are my list elements formatted for my Twitter tweets? Are the images loading? I don't know. Do my new message indicators work? I didn't even know there was a new message indicator because I can't see anything. Are my times formatted? Well, now when I look at it with design time data, I can see in the title the name of the users up there. I see the picture of some guy lounging in a chair. I see the new message indicator, the blue bars on the left, and all my times seem to work. I got 17 seconds, 7 minutes, 14 minutes. They're all formatted. Much, much easier to see and test your application when you're using something like design data. So how does this all work for you? Swapping services is really important when you're using design time data. Now, if you didn't break your services out, it makes it harder to do something with design data because inside of your application, if your services are being handled inside of your view model, specifically meaning your view model is actually loading data itself, well, it might be calling WCF or WCF for your services. Inside of the designer, it can't call WCF. So when you're running inside of Visual Studio, when you're not running inside of Visual Studio, it's not going to go call WCF and crank up a service and go get your data across the internet. It's not going to work. At best, it won't work. At worst, you'll see some kind of an error somewhere, and your designer won't render. So a couple options you have. One is use sample data that Blend supports really well, and you can use it with Visual Studio. Another option is to break your services out like I showed, and then when your service is broken out, you can use a class to determine if I'm at runtime, use the real service that goes across the internet. If my design time, use a design time version of my service. So I've got this class I call a service provider. It could be anything. And it's only got like 7 lines of code in it. And it basically says, if I'm design time, go ahead and create design time versions of my data services. If it's runtime, go ahead and hit the create the runtime services that'll hit the actual internet. Pretty easy to do. And it all works. So that's why when you go into the code, it all looks pretty good. So let's take a look at that code. So in my service provider itself, which I believe is up here, I've got this service provider base class, which basically says in here, all right, what services do I have? I've got a page conductor and a book data service. Notice they're implementing an interface, iPageConductor, iBookDataService. And then down below, which I'm not going to undo, but down below I'm basically just saying, when I create this instance, I want to say, if I'm in the designer, go ahead and create the design version of my services or create the runtime version of my services. So what does the runtime version do? The runtime version just says, create a page conductor, create a book data service. That's it. The design version is a new class that I have, which says, create a version of my page conductor from this class called Design Page Conductor or Design Book Data Service. So let's take a look at these guys. We've already looked at what the book data service does. Let's look at the design version. The design version implements the same interface, so all the same methods are there. The view model has no idea if it's a design version or a real version. It doesn't care. The view model is going to run and do its code and all that fun stuff. It just wants to know, hey, look, I'm supposed to have a book data service to load books, to load categories. I'm supposed to be able to save. I'm going to talk to this guy that implements the interface iBook data service. So how do I do that? Just somebody give it to me. Inject it in my constructor. So the design book data service says, I've got the event handler for notify changes. It's got that same save method. In this case, I don't actually want to save when I'm in the designer, so that's kind of useless. I just say I'm going to save nothing. But when I get books by category, so I'm going to go get those books by category. I'm going to pass in the callback for the get books. Somebody's going to tell me the category. The view model will still pass that and the page size. I'm then going to go ahead and create a new instance of my design books class. Here's my actual design data. So my design data here is implementing an observable collection of book. And by default, I'm creating 20 copies of a book that I'm creating using this method down below. I just type in create a new book. I put some kind of date in there. And you can get more sophisticated logic if you want. A lot of people have sample code generators. Carl Shiflett, good buddy of mine, created some really cool sample code generators that he uses that you can use to do something like this as well. Pretty easy to do. I set the image source in there. I got my author name. I've even got nested objects. So this book has categories. So what category is the book in? It goes and gets a design version of the category, which we'll jump into. My design category, I create a bunch of those. Oops. There it is, my design category. And I'm creating a category technical. And I say 1, 2, 3, or 4, or 5 after those. So once you create that book, it returns it, creates 20 of those, comes back, and again, to the book view model, all it's doing is saying, oh, I just know that I'm going to go ahead and call search books, and when I search for the books, I'm going to call on search books, somebody's going to go ahead and call load books by title. And when I do that, it's going to call the book data service, and it's going to call this method. It has no idea. Is it design data? Is it runtime data? Nobody cares inside the view model. Nobody cares inside the view. But again, when I look at my screen, it helps me debug immediately. So I look at my views itself. Here's my book view. Let's close the example down a little bit. And you can see all my data showing up there. And you can tell that my image has an issue right here with the URL, my design data, so I can fix that. I've got all my lists coming up. That looks good. Notice my book of the day is showing up down here as well. We're all good to go. If I loaded images or had wrap panels, that would all show up. It also says I've got 20 books, so I know that that's right because I have 20 copies of that book down there. My submit button is hooked up. What about my book detail view? I have a book detail view to look at individual information. Because we need some design data on this as well, it automatically hooks in and says, here's all my design data. What about my checkout view? These are screens we haven't looked at yet. But there's the checkout view, and in this one you're going to see the books that were checked out to me, and then here's details about the individual book. So with the design time data, it really helps you look at your data before you ever run and figure out what's going on, how's the layout. You know, maybe I don't want this big white space bar in between. It makes it a lot easier. Sometimes I'll forget that I turned off a scroll bar and I have too many items. That'll show me right here in design time data how that looks as well. So with that, let's get back to the slides. So far we talked about how we bind our view to our view model, what MVVM is and why you might want to use it, and then how we break different things out into different classes. When you go through the sample code, which will be available to you on the website, serverlight.net, and on my blog, what you'll notice is all the classes are very short. I think my service providers, my services, all the design time data stuff, they're very, very short. Some of them are 7 lines of code, some of them are 40. All are very easily digestible. Breaking things out into different classes and separating these concerns makes it a lot easier for you to test it, reuse it, make it more maintainable. So up to this point, we haven't really talked too much about reuse services in this talk, but what if you wanted to use reuse services and use patterns? In the past, one of the big frustrations that I and a lot of developers have had is if you wanted to use patterns to help you build consistent applications, and you wanted to use something like reuse services or other tools, it wasn't always easy to do. Because sometimes the tool that you used or the framework you used collided with the pattern you wanted to implement. So a good example of that, hey, people ask me, how do you use Prism and reuse services together? How do I use LLbGen Pro and use reuse services? Or how do you mix these things? They all can be mixed. But with MVVM, it wasn't always so easy. But I want to say that with reuse services and MVVM, it is easy to integrate the two. You can abstract out all the reuse services code from the MVVM pattern, so it doesn't actually put any of the reuse services logic in the view. Because remember, the whole idea of MVVM is to break things out a little bit, make it a little more abstract, easier to deal with. So with reuse services, if you do something like the domain data service control, which Dan showed briefly, and you drag it onto the screen, it puts logic in the XAML on how to go get your data. And there's a new version, as Scott mentioned, that'll be coming out that'll be more MVVM friendly. But until then, if you want to take that logic out, I would recommend not using the DDS in that particular case with MVVM. And instead, I would use a domain context and use a pattern like we're looking at here, where you've got the book data service, which actually goes out and it gets the data, hides it from the view, and the view has no idea we're using reuse services. I mean, you think about that. Your view should never really know what it's using to get its data. It should just say, I'm here, load me up with data, I'm good. It's laying on the beach, getting sun. So why didn't we see it in the demos? Because it wasn't there. John is tricky, or is abstracted. It wasn't there. Nope, it was there. John is tricky, but no, it was abstracted. So in Ray services, we're going to abstract things out, pull them out with MVVM, separate them. And now again, if I wanted to use like idio.net data services instead, to use REST, I could do that with this pattern. Works great. If I want to use REST specifically and not use any of these technologies, I can actually implement REST to go in here, or POX, or any of these things. It doesn't matter how you're getting your data because you're abstracting it. So in Rea services, what do? You create your domain service on the server the way you normally do, generate your client objects, puts all the WCF glue in there for you to get your data back to the client. And with that, you still get all your change tracking and your paging and your filtering. You can use your entities as your models if you want to. The nice thing about Rea services there is they already implement the INPC, the iNotify property changed interface. One thing I've learned at working at Microsoft is I think you get a prize for the longest name class you can create. You get the domain context on the client as well. So that's your gateway to the web services. Dan talked about the domain context. It's basically the guy that sits on the client for Rea services, which allows you to get data, load data, save data, handles change tracking. It's the context. And it handles that for you. So by using Rea services with MVVM, you get a lot of that validation, change tracking, all that goodness, and you don't give up the pattern in any way. So that's a really nice aspect of it. And through abstraction of services, all this is very, very possible. So in summary, we talked about what MVVM is, kind of why you'd want to use it, some of the advantages. We talked about how we respond to user interactions, like commands and behaviors. We talked about abstracting our code and separating our concerns. We talked about design data and how it can help you test your applications and how you can integrate Rea services. What I want to wrap up with is you'll hear a lot of people get on with patterns like MVVM and others and say, well, don't use that or use this, or, you know, there's 20 different frameworks out there. Easiest thing to do when you get into MVVM, honestly, is to just take your view, take your data, bind them together, and understand that piece first. You don't need frameworks. You don't need toolkits and frameworks and everything else. You can do it without any of the other knowledge or aspects. Put them together, see how they work. If you want to do something special with the framework, by all means, go for it. You can use things like Prism or Caliburn or Caliburn Micro. I actually like that better than Caliburn. It's a little easier to handle. You can use those. Prism has a new version out. Works great. That's Prism, not prison, by the way. Somebody asked me earlier, why do you keep telling me to go to prison? So you can use any of those. You can use the MVVM toolkit. I like using that personally because I can choose what I want to use and throw away the rest. It's great stuff. Overall, anybody has any questions about this, I'm always available to answer. You can contact me through email or whatnot. And I got to tell you, I just want to take a quick, brief moment out of this day. I've had a great time today, and I hope you all have had a good time with this too. We're going to keep going with the sessions here. We're going to have a break pretty soon, but I just want to take a moment out to thank you all for taking your time to come here. Thank you.